Today's program was brought to you by Roth, Wisconsin, makers of the world's best cheese and pioneers in the U.S. artisan cheese movement. For more information, visit rothcheese.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Greetings and welcome to Animal Instinct. I'm your host, Celia Kutcher, also known as the Food Healer, and I wanted to wish you guys all a really happy new year. It's been freezing in Brooklyn. I don't know about where you guys are, but damn, it's cold. And so it's been a bit of an interesting start to the year because it's so freaking freezing. So I hope everybody out there has been enjoying their 2017 so far. Today's guest is going to be Denise Herman, who is the founder and creator of Empire of the Dog. And we are going to talk all about dog things. So Denise, thank you so much for coming into the studio.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me, Celia.
How are you?
Doing good. Aside from, you know, all of my extremities are frozen.
I know. It's like my, I don't think I'm going to get my toes back until March, but. Oh,
and yet I bought popsicles yesterday at the supermarket.
Oh, isn't
go figure.
That weird? I had a pint of ice cream last night. I know.
I really like popsicles.
I don't know what that is. It's crazy. But so, all right, dog trainer. Let's start off by asking you, what kind of dogs do you train?
Well, Empire of the Dog focuses primarily on pet dogs. So just, any anything that's a not service dog, not protection dogs, they might be sort of therapeutic dogs here and there, but we don't really offer that as a specific service. Ours is just basically manners and all the stuff you need from your pet to have a harmonious household.
Makes sense. And so, one of the things that I hear a lot about, is a lot of people, when they get a dog, it'll be like, I don't know if I need a trainer or not. Like, I had a dog in my house as a kid, or I've never done this, so this shouldn't be that hard, that kind of thing. What are some reasons for getting a trainer?
Well, I think in a lot of ways it's so you don't get in the weeds and then have to kind of dig out of some terrible behavioral hole, or you get to the point where you're frustrated so far beyond being able to do, anything functionally good at that point with the dog that you're like, it's just a big mess and we can't do it. I feel like there is something to be said for getting some help early on before you feel like there's a problem. They just go, well, how do we start off on the good foot? How do we do that?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's one of the main reasons that I think you could get one, or even to do a class. There's a difference, to a degree between, paying someone for their private time to come in and work with you versus taking a class that's, one size fits all, but can give you the basics. Mm-hmm. It's a broad stroke, but it's certainly, better than nothing. And the instructors can, talk to you a little bit in the downtime about some specifics that might be going on with your particular dog.
That's cool. And then, one of the things that I've always found is just in terms of communication, I feel like training benefits because then you're able to create a dialogue.
Well, yeah. You've got a way to give the person the reasonable expectations from their dog, because people really don't know what to expect, whether it's a puppy or it's an adult dog or it's a large dog or it's a small dog, or the idea that every single dog is an individual, as we know, but still, it's different training, an older dog, a younger dog, and whatever's going on with them specifically.
And so what are the two main reasons that people call you?
If we're talking about behavior problem solving stuff, like why they would call for different behaviors, either it's usually they've got a new puppy, mm-hmm. and that's just, this big blank slate of, oh my God, it's a hostage crisis. What do we do all day with this 8-week-old puppy? Every time we put it down, it pees and it poops. And if we try to hold it, it bites us. And if we try to put it away, it screams. And I feel like a psychic when people call and say, yeah, I've got this puppy. And I'm like, okay, so is it, barking, jumping, peeing, mouthing? They're like, yeah, yes, all of those. How did you know? Because in one regard, all puppies do that. It's so very normal. So I would say, there's the blank slate of the puppy thing that people go, we have a new puppy, or we're getting a new puppy, and we're we don't want to go through this process blindly. Mm-hmm. And the other reason is that they have a dog that already has some behavior problem. Mm. Or, you know, and that could be something that's as mild as just jumping on guests or chewing a little bit mm-hmm. to it screams nonstop and eats drywall every time we leave the house.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, that definitely happens. And I would put in the blank slate category of the puppies as well that it could be newly adopted dog of any age. That's like the dog is fresh. The dog is new and we don't know who it is or what it's going to do and we're terrified.
Makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, for sure. Even when I foster dogs and I'm a professional, like I've been doing it like 17, 18 years now. And when I foster a dog, I still feel in the beginning that it's absolute chaos. Cause I just don't know, is it going to get better? Is it going to get better with what I'm doing easily? Or is this going to be something I have to dig in and it's going to be much more difficult? So I usually tell people when they have a new dog or if I'm talking to them and it's still pretty fresh that there really is a 3-day panic cycle that you don't get a routine with a new pet or certainly a dog till about 3 days where you feel like, okay, now I have 3 days behind me. I can mm-hmm. see the arc of what's happening here or, you know, what are the standard things that are going to happen every single day or how to spend our time. Mm-hmm. But until that 3 days is up, every day is like a fresh new hell, maybe. Yeah. Who knows?
Yeah. And it's also, I mean, dogs are such routine animals that to get that routine when you've got something in, especially like a rescue or something that has its whole past that you don't know what the routine was then. So then you're trying to get it in and work with it and create it. It's got to get tough for people that just don't know.
Well, sometimes people really do get, and understandably, mired in the psychology of what does the dog think? Mm. What happened to it? What, you know?
Totally.
This idea that, that they have to know all that stuff to be able to be successful in the here and now. Mm-hmm. And you kind of can, it's not as important as people would think. Mm. You kind of just look at the dog in front of you and go, who is it now? Yeah. What is it doing now? You know, is it house trained now? Yeah. Is it biting on me now? You know, or for the last 3 days or the last week. So it doesn't really matter in mm-hmm. a way to know exactly what happened before because you regardless have to deal with the now.
Yeah, exactly. And so, I mean, any bad behavior will show up in the now.
Yeah. And so it's just, it's nice to get people a little bit sometimes out of that over wondering stuff where they're like, but what if he was fed at this time and I feed him at this time, or he's used to having this and now he has this. And you know, what about his name? I don't know what his name was. And can I change his name? And they called him Pookie Bear in the shelter, but I hate the name Pookie Bear. Do I have to call him Polly Bear? Do I have to make it close? Whatever. And I'm like, no, the dogs are pretty resilient. You know, they have a pretty amazing ability to adapt to whatever's the now.
Hmm.
So, and which is why I can do my job because they have that adaptability.
Totally.
So I can go in and go, here's how we're going to set this up and, you know, watch, here's how it changes.
I mean, this is kind of a bizarre question, but it's like,
I've heard it.
I know you've heard it. That's why I'm going to ask you. It's like a lot of people, you know, if their animal's acting up or something happens and it's almost like they're almost considering it's out of spite. Like, well, he did that because I did this. It's all cause and effect and, like, this spiteful behavior. I mean, do you even work with dogs forever? Are they spiteful?
No, they're really not. But they have behaviors that come out, you know, in certain instances where it could feel like that. But it's much more that you can usually much more readily look at it as, you know, a fallout of an anxiety of some sort that the mm-hmm. dog has. I mean, we control everything. The dog really doesn't have an investment in making us pissed off about stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I think, you know, like a prime example is sometimes, you know, the dog might be jumping up or trying to get our attention and the owner will tell me, they'll be like, and then when I ignored her and told her to go away, she went in the corner and peed.
Yeah.
And just as one thought, and there's many potential reasons, you know, or cause and effects, but just as one thought, we could certainly go, maybe it was trying to tell you that it had to pee. And, you know, you don't speak dog. It doesn't speak, you know, English, obviously, or you don't have that communication yet. So then it was like, I don't know. I guess I'll go over here and pee.
Yeah.
So I like to, you know, as a species, we love to blame.
Yeah, we
you
do.
Know, and to put our human dynamics into every situation we can finagle it into.
It's so true.
My computer's so spiteful, you know.
Yeah, my Siri is mentally challenged on my phone, so I hear you.
Yeah, there you go. So, yeah. Same thing with the alpha stuff. Not worth mm-hmm. using as a metric to change behavior or thinking about, really. It's junk science as well.
So, I mean, it's so with people that don't know or that are trying to solve problems, like the typical lay person at home with a pet. So it kind of sounds like they're just overthinking everything in many cases, and they just don't know what's going on. So then all these assumptions are being made, you know, of like, well, this is this because of this. And it's like,
well, we just, I understand that. I mean, I really understand people not, it's not intuitive. Mm-hmm. It's really not intuitive. You know, if it was, I wouldn't have a job.
That's true.
And for example, there's not a lot of cat trainers out there needed. You know, cats, you just kind of set things up and the cat's like, I'm a cat. I was going to do what I want anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, because dogs are so changeable, they kind of, you know, if no one's giving them, you know, a boundary about what's okay, what's not okay, and talking to them in a way they can understand about it, they're just going to go, well, I guess it's, you know, every man for himself.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I really like to go in and talk to people and take the blame off of them, because they've been told, or they've seen in TV, and, you know, the models they have for how dog trainers are mm-hmm. that they're going to come in, they're going to tell you everything that's wrong with your dog,
yeah.
and that it's your fault. And I think that happens in parenting too. So like,
totally,
you know,
totally.
And I absolutely, not only do I not want to do that, I don't do it, but it's not helpful and it's actually not correct.
Mm.
You know, you're not to a degree, certainly, you know, if you let your dog jump up on the counter and eat food off the counter, he's going to jump up more on the counter and eat food off the counter.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you have a dog who's scared of thunderstorms, or, you know, hides, you know, when loud trucks go by, or gets upset, or is separation anxious, or, mm-hmm. or anything that has to do with the dog just, you know, being upset or a little bit frightened, or anything to do with that, that's really the dog. It's, you know, not you being a good enough leader.
Yeah, yeah.
There's no real thing that I would go, if you had just been a better leader or harsher or louder or whatever, that your dog would be a radically different dog.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, we go in and we look at the dog and the problems, and we, if it's something to do, you know, if it's something to do more with the dog being stressed or anxious, or, you know, in cases of aggression and things like that, we're not radically changing the dog.
Yeah.
You know, you're not going to turn a hand-wringing, anxious dog into, you know, homecoming queen.
Yeah, totally.
They're different animals.
Yeah.
They're each individuals. And anyone can even test this theory in their life. If you've ever lived with two dogs simultaneously, or you've known someone who's lived with two dogs simultaneously, mm. it's rare, if not almost impossible, that they are ever exactly the same dog, even if yeah. they're siblings, and especially if they're siblings. You're like, no, they're radically different personalities and often radically different temperaments. And despite being of the same mother
yeah,
in some
right.
cases, despite having been at the same house at the same time, raised by the same people. And I just like to point out that's happening, so that people don't think if we just, you know, did this or that,
right.
our dog would be perfect, or just like our last dog, or wouldn't be this dog. You know, we push the needle with, you know, behavior modification, and we take it to somewhere that's hopefully more livable for both the dog and the person.
Well, it's like we were talking on the way over about like just attitudes that people have and stereotypes of different breeds.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so like this kind of falls into that as well, where it's like each animal has its own personality. So just because you had a golden when you were five and you got one last year, it doesn't mean he's going to be just like Sparky.
Yeah. Yeah. Or that it looks like a golden retriever. Therefore, it must act like a golden retriever, and golden retrievers do X.
Oh, God, that's true.
You know, you can look at any dog and go, why does it do that? And you should just answer it with, because it's a dog.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, it's not going to climb trees and pick grapefruits, because dogs don't do that. But anything else, you know, that you go, oh, is it chasing a ball? We go, oh, it's a border collie. It's chasing it because it thinks it's sheep. Oh, it's a retriever. It's chasing yeah. it because it thinks it's a retriever. Oh, it's bird dog. It's chasing it because it thinks it's bird.
Yeah,
it's
yeah,
like,
yeah.
well, dogs chase things.
Totally.
And dogs are social animals, so sometimes they get anxious when they're alone because they're dogs.
Yeah.
But, you know, more progressively lately, people are really looking at, especially in the sheltering world, mm-hmm. to not label dogs based on their looks as suspected breed mixes, because it ends up really not panning out so well for the dogs
mm.
because people have so many biases that it opts more people out of being interested in a dog than
oh,
it
wow.
opts them in. And, you know, it's so funny, I didn't tell you about this earlier, but a friend of mine just got a foster dog recently. This just happened like 2 days ago. We were talking about this very thing. She got this foster dog, and it's a black scraggly dog. It's really cute. And she got it because she used to have a Brussels Griffon that was also a rescue that they, you know, they knew it was a Brussels. It was obviously Brussels. This one looks kind of Affenpinscher-y. And I think they had it down, I don't know, some sort of mix. I don't know, terrier mix. I don't remember. But she was like, oh, I think, or maybe they even wrote it was an Affenpinscher mix. Who knows? And we were were hanging out with it, and I was like, oh, wait a minute. I was like, you know what this dog is? And she's like, no, what? I'm like, it's a Jackapoo. I was like, because no, I have trained a bunch of Jackapoos, and it's a Jackapoo. And she goes, oh, I don't want it to be a Jackapoo. And I was like, why? It's still the same dog in front of us. It's acting the same way. And even then, like 20 minutes later, I'm like, oh, for F's sake, it's not a Jackapoo either. Who knows what it is? But yeah, we should you know, DNA test it because it's fun, but not because it's actually going to give us much insight. Mm. Again, it comes back to work with the dog that's in front of you. You know, what's it doing? What do you want it to do? And then bridge that gap and don't get mired down in, oh, I can't fix it because, you know, border collies do this.
Yeah,
or
totally,
Russells do this. Cause I was like, what's wrong with the Jackapoo? And she's like, well, I don't really like poodles and Jack Russells are too difficult or something.
Oh, my God, like, that's sounds like the smartest dog on the... That would be, like, the most...
Well, I've worked with actual Jackapoos.
Brilliant.
They were lovely, but they were, again, all different. I'm sure. You know, some are smart, some are quick, some are not. It's just such a dice roll, you know? It's fine if you like the look of this dog.
Right,
you know?
Right.
Like, you know, if she's like, I just like this black, cute, little, small, shaggy-haired dog.
Totally.
Call it whatever you want, then. I don't care.
Exactly. I've done that. I've made up dog breeds when I was dog walking years ago. And, you know, I'd be walking mutts, and people would be like, what is this? It'd be like, oh, it's a, you know, I don't even remember. It'd be like, oh, it's a Spanish ocean dog. Oh, my friend has one of those. Oh, really?
I called it a Williamsburg crap grabber. I'm like, because they're just in the side. You know, they're just in the gutter, like, and there's pizza crust and chicken bones. I'm like, that describes the behavior. You know, let's just call it that breed.
Seriously, it really works.
I once had a dog, it was many years ago, clients of mine had a dog. I swear to God, I'd never heard of this dog. I never heard of it since then either, but it does exist. It was called a St. Petersburg Orchid.
What did it look like?
Black, like a black poodle mix. Like almost like a black Maltese.
Huh.
Crazy rare dog they got from Russia. It was a lovely dog, but I'm like, really? A St. Petersburg Orchid? I've never in all my life. It's certainly not in any breed books.
It sounds like it was translated wrong or something. You know? It's crazy.
You can Google it. It's there.
Sure. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the type of thing, though, like, and I might be wrong on this, so please correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't know if getting, like, being, like, the first of this breed in the country is necessarily a good idea. Like, I kind of, I'm a little torn about people that have, like, incredibly rare, even cats, like dogs or cats, because I don't know if there's that much, you know, like, baseline information on them here and things like that in terms of medical.
Yeah, I mean, well... you know, it still goes back to that it's an individual, but the issue there is that you're getting, you know, ostensibly, you know, if we're talking about a puppy, then we get into the whole, you know, what I call the puppy problem, which is it's not a blank slate where you just create the dog you want on top of this, like, you know, empty bucket. It's a puppy. I can fill the bucket with whatever I want this puppy to be. It's no, the bucket's filled. You just can't see what's in there yet. This dog's not grown into who he's going to be. And again, you know, where you have him, what you do with him pushes the needle of who he's going to be one way, you know, to this side, to that side. And you can, you know, you can affect that, but you cannot radically change it.
Makes sense.
And it's not change it based on breed. It's not, you know, like that. It's just, it's gonna grow up to be who it was kind of grow up to be.
Totally.
I mean, I had a husky growing up that I taught to heel next to my bicycle.
That's cool.
How unlikely is that?
Seriously, that's pretty amazing.
Right? And then I taught my chihuahua to heel next to my bicycle. We would ride, I told you this before, we'd ride
that's
around Williamsburg,
sweet.
And she would heel next to my bicycle, like, running. She's a big chihuahua, by the way, people. She was not, like, you know, a little, like, teacup
like
chihuahua.
Mean.
She was, like, 11 pounds in legs. But people would heckle me. They'd yell and be like, stop it. That's so mean. I'm like, she is fine. She is exercising. She's going to eat my socks later if we don't run her like this.
Well, I am talking to Denise Herman of Empire the Dog. We need to take a break, so we will do station identification. Be back in about a minute and a half.
And this one's called Old Brown Dog by The Hollows. We'll be right back. Have you tasted the world's best cheese? Grand Cru Sauchois is the 2016 World Cheese Champion. Our partners at Roth, Wisconsin make this gorgeous alpine-style cheese in the rolling hills of Greene County, Wisconsin. Grand Cru Sauchois is produced by hand in Swiss copper vats and finished by aging on spruce planks. The quality milk and careful craftsmanship bring out the award-winning light floral notes, nutty undertones, a hint of fruitiness, and a mellow finish. Perfect with Riesling and Muscat, Grand Cru Sersois is a guaranteed hit for any occasion. Check out their other offerings at rothcheese.com. You'll discover Buttermilk Blue and their newest release, Prairie Sunset, the golden-hued love child of Mimolette and Gouda. You'll also find recipes like the Raclette Reuben and tomato tartlets. Everything you need to know about the world's best cheese is at rothcheese.com.
And we're back. That was such a cute ad. That was really sweet, David. It was nice to hear your voice.
I was just
thinking
I'm going to find a way to work the word tartlet into everyday conversation now.
Let's see if you can get it into the rest of this interview at some point.
I think that was the first time I ever said it in my life.
You did good.
If anyone's looking for a good dog name, there it is. Tartlet.
Tartlet. It's very fancy. It reminds me of the John Lovitz episode of Friends when he gets really stoned and he goes to Monica's house for dinner and she makes tartlets. And he just keeps repeating tartlet,
yeah.
Tartlet.
Oh, I have a vague memory of that now. I love John Lovitz. Oh, God. Don't get me started. See how it works is the train moves, not the station.
Yeah, right?
Yeah. All right.
All right. Let's get back to doggies. So does every dog issue require training to fix it?
You know, there is this, notion, this belief people have about training, and that trainers perpetuate to a degree, where we tend to look at things as training issues when sometimes there is a quicker way up the mountain that doesn't require training at all. And the difference between that would be like training a behavior around a problem versus getting rid of the trigger for the problem or diffusing, you know, the way it comes up kind of a thing. And young trainers are a little bit more likely to come into a situation and want to train everything because they've just learned to train.
Yeah, totally.
But you have to remember, unless you're going to be there training the dog every single day with them, unless you're doing like a board and train or you're going in and doing day training, they're not dog trainers. They're going to, you know, not get the bang for their buck that you're going to get doing it. And if you're going in to solve the problem, they don't really care exactly how you solve it.
That's true.
You know, I've often gone into things where, I'll give a good example, is like barking at, say, out the window when they see something. And in New York, it could, you know, be out someone's, you know, window in their high rise, or it could be the front window or something like that.
Yeah.
As an example. And I'll be like, well, what if we just move that chair away from the window so the dog can't jump on the chair and look out the window? Would that fix the problem? Would that be acceptable?
Right.
And people are like, yeah, that's great. Because they don't want to train it any more than, you know, than I want to sit there and do these hours and hours. And I just don't think there's really any, you know, grand nobility in training something and throwing that much energy at it if a management quick change solution like that will work and is not offensive at all to the person or the dog.
Yeah.
You know, if it's something that it's going to show up multiple places, certainly you have to dig into certain things and work on that.
Mm-hmm.
But I once had clients that had these two dachshunds, and the dachshunds were really barky at noises in the hall, and they lived sorted by the elevator side of like the hallway or something. And they basically were like, we're going to soundproof the door. And they just had the door soundproofed. End of problem.
Perfect.
No man hours put in there.
Nice.
And you can look at, like, how many times do you want me to come and pay me or you to take time and do this work versus here's a dollar amount that might fix it right there and you're done.
Yeah.
So that worked really, really well for that one. I mean, there's only so many man hours, and the dog's going to have some things that you just can't work around.
Totally.
That you have to dig into, and you're going to have to put the man hours in to fix that, you know? And then there's others that if you can manage it, if you can have that kind of a, you know, I hesitate to use the word quick fix because usually that means crappy.
Yeah.
But it is kind of a quick fix when it's appropriate. I'm trying to think if there's any others that I can think of that are specific like that, where I've just been like, how about if we do this?
I mean, it's a brilliant idea, because if not, if you're going to like start getting really hyper training, like every single thing this animal does, you're going to get just neurotic.
Yeah. I had another client who her dog was like hysterical about the chipmunks out in the yard. And she'd run a little like metal wire thing up around like the, you know, the, the garden wall.
Yeah.
Like just a little hot wire to keep the chipmunks from going up there.
Yeah.
And that is a way more crazy expensive, actually, fix than they eventually, the chipmunks just worked around it as they do. It's like, we want our nuts or whatever.
Exactly.
And it could have been other things. You know, if there was a horse or a cow out there or something, that the dog would go ballistic at that, too.
Yeah.
And we eventually did end up, she got some really nice, like, way to fog the bottom half that the dog could see out of.
Perfect.
Totally done.
Nice.
Now, it's different if your dog's reacting to the sound of things as well. Like, I've had clients who, like, it's the clinking of the front gate.
Yeah.
It's like, can we put a closer on it that slows it down?
Yeah.
Like a hydraulic closer? Can we put a little padding here so it doesn't make that clinking noise? Again, problem solved. And if the dog's not, like, barking and being frantic about every single noise everywhere, it's just this one particular, then treat the one particular, you know, and pat yourself on the back. Job done. Move on. Because there'll be something else you have to throw the man hours at.
Makes a lot of sense, man.
And it's kind of funny because sometimes I do go in and I'm not training.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, this is going to fix it quicker. And if I ask the client, and we have that dialogue where I'm like, how would that be?
Yeah.
They're like, that would be great. I'm like, okay, then let's chalk that one up and let's try it.
Totally.
I don't know that it's going to work. But it's certainly, in my opinion, and I explain it to people this way, I always want to go in first and try the least invasive, easiest, broadest stroke, rather than try to turn them into a dog trainer in an hour. They're not going to get there skill-wise.
Totally.
And that's kind of... That's a recognition of that I don't know that I was taught it when I went to dog training school exactly, or not so literally, and it just had to come to me over time of working with people to go, no, there's just, you know, there's no nobility in training stuff that you could just manage your way around if it didn't bother anybody. Because I've seen people do way more invasive management things. Like, and not bad, but they were willing to do that. Like, baby gates here, and the sofa's moved here, and the kids are over here, and the dogs are over there. And she's like, well, they're old dogs. She's like, I know we're not going to fix them. She called me in, and she's like, oh, yeah, they're old dogs. We're not going to fix them. She goes, but they're my babies, too. Yeah. They're my first babies, and I'm not getting rid of them. So we have this whole system. It was like levees and things. And,
pulleys.
But to her credit, she was absolutely willing to do that. And it did work for her problem.
That's cool.
So, fine. Done. Let's move on. What next? You know, that's the thing.
Big time. And so, like, when you're working with people and they actually do have jobs to do, I mean, how hard is it for them to get them to do their homework?
Oh, you know, that's, again, why I want to try to make it expedient when possible, because I can give them the absolute textbook right solution and pat myself on the back and be like, yeah, that's what they have to do, and poo-poo it if they don't, and be like, ah, well, they're just not doing the work. But the fact is, I've got to be sensitive to the fact that they do only have so much time, and I think part of my job is to, as long as it's humane still to the dog, and that's a big deal for me, is that I'm like, you don't get to not do the work and hurt your dog to make up that slack. Like, no. But that's why it's even more important for me to find these types of creative solutions, so that they don't have to resort to something like that, or they get from a trainer a totally untenable real world, like, not useful solution. So getting them to do their homework is part about motivating them as to what to expect and what it's going to be, and you know, just going into it with realistic expectations and why it's going to work or what they should start seeing, so they can even self-motivate early on.
Right.
But to also check in with them and be like, does that sound like something you can do? Or, you know, a lot of times with house training, I'll say certain things like, okay, if you don't want to crate train him, you can still do it without that, but you are going to, it's going to cost you more time. You're going to have to do these other things differently. So you decide where you want to put your resources and what you're willing to do. And then let them make, and then I, that's what I say to them. And then I let them, you know, make the decision going, you're making our job harder, which is okay. You know, I'm on board. You tell me what we need to do, I'll get us there. But I want you to know this is a less expedient solution because you're resistant to this other thing, which is fine. They're allowed to. It's their dog. It's their life. They're allowed to be that way. And I think part of my job is to be a problem solver that way, and to set up a situation where they feel comfortable saying, like, if I was like, oh, can you, you know, if they suppose they have like a fancy house, and I was like, well, you could just put a baby gate up there, if they're like, no, we're not putting a baby gate next to our Eames. You know, fine. Then I go, okay, well, then here's another option, and we roll down the list. So it's a pretty creative process, I would say, as well.
it's awesome that there are options, you know, because it's so, like, I think so many people think that, like, people that don't know that, you know, if, like, working with an animal trainer, you know, it's going to be like, this is what we do and this is what the rules are. And it's kind of, I mean, for me, it's a big red flag if you're working, because I've worked with horse trainers for years and, you know, a couple dog trainers and stuff like that. But anyone that's got an absolute, I'm a little leery of it because it's, you know, it's a really big stereotype, and it's the same as giving an absolute for people. And I mean, really the only absolutes we have is that we're going to die someday, you know,
someday.
Like, yeah.
Every day is a little closer.
Well, that's true. But you know, otherwise, but it's not like, you know, it's kind of like if A then B, and if, and I hate to use this term, but it's what I got right now, you know, for
is
any
tartlet?
No, sentient being, but good job.
That was good.
Okay. You know, anything with a sentient being and its own will and its own brain is going to be different than everybody else. I mean, there will be common things. There are common
stereotypes. Yeah, I mean, there's to a certain degree laws of behavior, but you don't know which way things are going to go. Like, you know, one of the big lessons are you know, like behavior lessons we learned in dog school. Was, you know, you could say, okay, the dog jumps on, let's say the dog jumps on you and you give it a cookie.
Mm-hmm.
Are you reinforcing jumping or are you punishing jumping or neither? And it's almost a trick question if you're not really, really savvy, which is how we needed to come out of that education, which was really, really savvy about it. Because the answer is you don't know till you see the effect on the behavior.
Oh, wow.
It's determined by, is the dog in the future time now jumping more, jumping less, or unchanged? Because just me giving you $10, for example, doesn't mean that I've reinforced anything that I think I've reinforced. Depends on so many different factors, but the one mathematical absolute is, if I gave you $10 because I wanted to increase X, or I gave it to you right after X thinking I was going to increase X,
right,
if X doesn't go up, it wasn't a reinforcement, regardless of all other things. It's always about the effect on behavior.
Wow.
And quantifying that.
Wow.
So it's always that thing of like, don't assume.
Mm-hmm.
You know, don't assume that you're, don't assume for people like that you're punishing your dog, which I don't advocate in this way, but you know, for like by yelling at them or anything else, if they're jumping on you, you have to look at the effect on jumping. I'm like, well, I'm still here.
Yeah.
So probably he's still jumping.
Yeah.
And what's going on is you are trying to be punishing, but it's a lot of attention and your dog's a social animal. And mm-hmm. he's like, oh, we're all barking. It's so great.
Totally.
Let's scream together.
Totally.
And that's kind of a come to Jesus moment for some people. They're like, oh, now I get it.
Oh my God, my neighborhood is full of people like walking their dogs. We have a lot of little tiny yappy dogs that have a lot of fear, so there's a lot of barking early in the morning.
New York City's a scary place.
Oh my God. I mean, it's, I can't tell you how many, it's like, shut up! You know, it's like, oh, that's great. Thank you. Now you've woken up a 4-block radius instead of your little dog yapping and waking up 3 people, you know, and it just becomes that battle of wits, and then it's like, I can't imagine why your dog's so full of fear.
Oh, yeah. It's, you know, it's a tough road for dogs. I have a lot of empathy for dogs that, well, I would say live in the city, but really dogs that live anywhere with people. And I have a lot of empathy for people trying to live with dogs and do the right stuff as well. I mean, I often say to people in lessons about the dog, we'll talk about something like specific, maybe like using a puzzle toy and putting food in a Kong toy and letting them chew on it and, you know, figure it out.
Yeah.
And I will say to them very literally, I'll be like, you know, it's just so hard for dogs to be a dog in our world. Like, what can they do that's a dog-like thing? So give them this. Let them be a dog in a safe way that doesn't offend us. Look, give them this thing. Don't put it in the bowl. You're feeding them like a farm animal.
Yeah, it's true.
Put it in this Kong. Let them be a dog. I mean, they can't be a dog so many other ways. They can't just run over to everything they want. They can't jump up to see everything they want. They can't run free. They can't hunt for things. They can't bark at things. They can't put their mouth on everything. We're like a big pile of
at
the dog. So you have to look at how can I let the dog be a dog in a way that works for the dog and works for me?
Yeah.
So.
I think that's, I mean, this is why I love talking to you, because it's so logical. Like, it all just, you know, it's like people, I don't know if people give dog trainers the amount of respect that you guys deserve, because it's something that's kind of like, you get a dog and then you get a trainer. Like, I don't know if people really understand how much work and how much thinking really goes into this, you know, because you guys have to be so quick on your feet in order to be able to solve these problems and to communicate effectively with the owners as well. Because there's a lot of trainers that aren't good with people or, you know.
Well, yeah, that's a, you know, that's a, it's a, it's a little pet peeve in some ways is, mm-hmm. you know, when I hear people who want to be dog trainers or even if they are, and someone might say, like, why do you want to do that? Or that comes up somehow, and they're like, oh, well, I just love dogs so much. I really hate people.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm like, oh, God. You know, it just makes me wince. It makes me cringe. I'm like, oh, how's that going for you or those people? I don't know. I am very much a people person, as much as a dog person. Mm-hmm. So I like that. It works for me. I like the variability and the talking to people. I like to teach. I think I've told you that before.
Yeah,
if
totally.
I didn't do this, I would just teach something.
Yeah,
I love teaching. I love the process of teaching.
It's fun. It is fun. I mean, I like to teach too, and it's. Yeah. I would like to be doing more of that. So we're close to running out of time, but I just want to ask you one more thing. I mean, we were talking about this earlier too, that there's so much information online about dog training and so much is contradictory. So, like, if someone doesn't know or even has a clue, are there any, like, buzzwords or anything that they can know so that what they're reading they can discover is legit or best for their pet?
Oh, God. You know, I mean, reading online for dog advice is almost the same as reading online for anything else. Like, you know, when... As you do, Google, you know, all your symptoms, and then you're like, I'm dying. You know, it's so terrible because I kind of want to say, oh, God, don't do that.
Yeah.
But there is good advice out there. There is good stuff. But there's so much contradictory advice that it's hard for people to dig in and make a decision and go from there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the rules of thumb that I would go by that I've started to think about more and more is if you would not do it to a toddler, you shouldn't do it to a dog. You know, and that's that might not, considering what you know, still many years ago was advised for toddlers, that might not even be strong enough.
Yeah.
But certainly there's things out there that you should not do to your dog. And unfortunately, there's a lot of training advice that suggests those sort of things and seems to give very reasonable, kind of sensible reasons for it. And that's kind of a problem because it's not intuitive necessarily. It doesn't make sense.
Mm-hmm.
If we judge what to do with our dogs by the metrics we apply sometimes to other people, it doesn't work out very well for the dog. You know, so I would say that maybe if you find like one good source or a couple good sources mm-hmm. online, I mean, usually a lot of the humane organizations have a pretty decent advice about stuff. I would say that the San Francisco SPCA's website is probably a good place to go and look for some advice that you can follow there that's really good. I also like Animal Farm Foundation.
Mm.
They have a great website and a lot of free resources for people who have dogs or who work in sheltering or rescue or any of that. And it's all very humane, pet-friendly stuff.
Nice.
So, I mean, some of the buzzwords, I guess, would be like pet-friendly, dog-friendly. You know, when you're researching a trainer or a place and they talk pretty actively about not just positive reinforcement, because that buzzword now everyone just... Everyone uses it, and there's a lot of people using it that aren't really positive trainers. But they'll say, "Oh yeah, we're very reinforcement based," or they'll euphemisms like, "Well, we're about life training," or
and
sometimes they'll even use like holistic, but that means the whole toolbag.
Yeah,
you know,
everything.
We're gonna like throw everything at it. So I don't love some of those slightly, you know, they're suspect. Doesn't mean it's wrong, but there's a lot of people playing with language. Like even people are calling themselves trained, like animal behavioral specialist. It's like if you are going to play with the word behaviorist in that way, using it kind of like off the side a little, you can't do that. If you're going to call yourself anything that sounds near behaviorist, you better have a PhD.
Yeah.
You know, you should have that.
Yeah.
But again, it gets played with a lot. But usually I would say positive reinforcement trainers, people who are doing humane training based in science and and with the dog's and the person's interest at heart, are not going to give qualified responses.
Cool.
It's going to be, we do this, we only work positively, we work nonviolently at all times. And then there's some trainer groups who have code of ethics, like I think the... what is it? Is it called positive? I think it's called Positive Pet Professionals or something like that. I might have it wrong. I can't remember it off the top of my head. A lot of the other dog trainer organizations are suggestive that you do it this way, but they don't really outline or hold people to that specific ethics standard.
Right, right.
So sometimes, you know, I tell people to ask around to other people they know who they see and they like how they're engaging with their dog. Mm-hmm. You can't just necessarily look at a well-behaved dog and go, that's the dog I should go to the same dog trainer. It's better kind of to see someone with a relationship with their dog that's the kind you want.
That's cool.
And go for that.
That makes sense.
Potentially.
That really makes sense. Well, sadly, we are out of time. But Denise, it's always great to talk to you. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're totally welcome.
And
so fun.
Tell everybody where you are and how they can find you so they can all contact you and help them train your dogs.
I am at empireofthedog.com online and Empire of the Dog on Instagram and Empire of the Dog on Twitter. you know. And we're located in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, and we teach in New York City, parts of almost all five boroughs, depending on the time of the year. And sometimes we do lessons in Baltimore, and we do phone lessons anywhere. So if you're struggling, there are certain things that we are really happy to do phone lessons about and that still lend themselves to us not having to be on site, and we can help you with.
Nice.
EmpireOfTheDog.com. Thanks.
Yay. And listeners, thank you guys so much for tuning in. I really appreciate it. I will be back next week with a brand new show. Until then, enjoy your week. Try not to freeze and take care.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.